Hello, I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. I feel like we might want to add a trigger warning to today's show. We're going to be talking about mortgages. What you should know before you go shopping around for a better mortgage offer in this particular time. Clay Jarvis, NerdWallet's mortgage financial expert, will be here to talk about how that process works and what you should be aware of. Then, dogs can put a smile on someone's face without even trying. And for some, it might help them deal with their financial anxiety. CIBC made an ad called Financial Stress Companions, where they let their clients meet with therapy dogs while talking about their financial worries. Caressa Lucrezanio is CIBC's head of financial planning and advice team. She will be our guest. And a company helping you find unclaimed tax deductions. Family Tax Recovery provides an in-depth analysis of your tax returns from years past. Its president and CEO, Stan Simole, takes us through how it works and how much you'll pay for it. Going to the dentist is really, really important, but it can cost you. One company that provides health and wellness consumer financing just expanded to 50 dental clinics across the country. It's called EP Care. We're going to talk to its senior VP, Taylor Annalis, on how this works and who can qualify. Plus, I'll speak to Michelle Slater, director at Indeed, about its list of the 20 best jobs in Canada. I wonder if they have a radio host on that list. I don't know. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. I used to work in traditional packaged goods marketing, and one of the lessons that you learned early on was that if you wanted to increase your test scores on a TV commercial, the fastest way to do it was to add a dog. People love dogs. They love dogs in general. They love dogs in advertising. CIBC has tried what they call an experiment to ease clients' financial anxiety with therapy dogs. And they've developed a spot that they call Financial Stress Companions. Caressa Lucrezanio is CIBC's VP of Financial and Investment Advice. She joins us now to talk about it. Hello, Caressa.
Hi there.
I have seen this spot, but this is radio. So if you could describe the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. So we named the campaign Financial Stress Companions because we understand how stressful finances can be for Canadians to talk about. And we know that money is the top source of stress for Canadians today. And we really wanted to articulate how we can help. So this is how the campaign came to light. It was a one-day experiment where we brought in therapy dogs to sit with and comfort clients who had been putting off talking about their finances. These clients, they had important goals, like, for example, saving up for a mortgage down payment or figuring out how they were going to achieve their retirement plan, but they were just too stressed out to start. And what we found was that talking about your money with someone who cares and can help you see that bigger picture and guide you along the way was an important first step to relieving some of that stress. So this experiment was somewhat a metaphor to show that when you talk to one of our advisors, it can help you tackle your finances in a way that feels less overwhelming, feels attainable, and that this is with or without the Financial Stress Companions. Our advisors are here to help and make it feel comfortable.
When I saw the spot, I actually thought this was a real initiative. Did you, for like a millisecond in your fantasy, think, well, we've only got a couple thousand branches. We could source a couple of thousand therapy dogs. The manager could take them home on weekends. It would be perfect.
Yeah. And I mean, it could be something that we consider exploring in the future. We don't have plans to bring dogs into CIBC banking centers again, right? Like at this time, but we're always looking for new ways to make clients feel more comfortable. Again, it was really to show that, you know, when you're comfortable and when you're in a good setting and, you know, you can really speak about your finances and it can be a lot easier than first anticipated.
Now, as you say, therapy dogs are a metaphor, but it sounds like you're doing more work on how to reduce anxiety for clients who walk through your doors. What are some of the other things that you are doing in that regard?
So So we know that finances are top of mind for Canadians. And, you know, we know the economic environment has played a big, big role in financial stress today. We just conducted a financial priorities poll, and we found that, the number one priority for Canadians this year is paying off debt. Now, this has been the top priority for the last 12 years. However, it's much more prominent. The mix of debt is, you know, a little bit higher on the credit card side. So this is really important for Canadians. Managing day-to-day expenses is another thing that came, another priority that came in second. The good news is that Canadians still are really focused on growing wealth into their future. So that was the third priority. It may be a little bit hard to do that in this environment as much as it was before. But, you know, we're focused on helping clients with those goals. We're focused on having the conversation, understanding what is important to our clients and how we can put a plan in place. And so we also know that things like, you know, the expenses today are, you know, have got people a little bit more concerned. Inflation is currently sitting at 6.3 and it's come down a bit from that 6.9, but everyday essentials are still very expensive. So getting the management of finances and getting that clarity really, really helps as well. Like we've heard, you know, the biggest thing that we hear about a lot of the times from our clients is even just walking into the grocery store can be stressful. Like we're hearing terms like eggflation. Now eggs have gone up 16.5%. So, you know, having that conversation, setting those goals and starting to talk about what really is the crux of the stress or the anxiety.
Dogs don't speak, at least outside of the world of animated Disney features. Humans speak, your advisors, your branch level folks speak. What have you been working on to improve how they speak to clients in a way that mitigates some of the anxiety that clients feel? Because honestly, when you go into a bank, and I don't know, I haven't been into CIBC in a while, it sounds like this, wah, 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 to paraphrase Charlie Brown's teacher.
So think about it as in the context of this campaign. So think about, you know, having a conversation with an advisor. And this is where we really want the clients to experience having that conversation. And so I'll walk you through kind of, you know, what it would feel like to have a conversation. So, you know, the first thing that our advisors will talk to our clients about is understand what's important to them. If there is money stress, you know, what are you worried about? Is it the big worry is paying down debt, managing day-to-day expenses like groceries, saving for a rainy day, or growing your wealth. By identifying what is on, you know, our clients' minds when it comes to money, it really starts to, you know, paint that picture. One of the things that we will always talk about in the fundamentals of, you know, advice is really encouraging our clients to revisit or create their budget. So, you know, and that's first and foremost. So understanding what you have coming in and what you have going out creates an awareness and a better sense of control of your money. And creating a budget doesn't need to be difficult or time consuming, although it can feel like it. We recommend, you know, doing, you know, whether it's online, but using online budgeting tools. We have one, an interactive one at CIBC Smart Advice Hub, where you can enter in your income, enter in your expenses, and then it'll show you kind of where you're spending your money. The purpose of doing a budget, other than, you know, really making sure you have a good sense of where your money is going, is to understand, you know, what's the residual that you have at the end of the month, and what decisions are within your control that you can, you know, tackle to free up some of that money. Because the second thing that we will often start to talk about is then from that, let's talk about setting your goals.
Now, this advertising idea, which is why we're here in the first place, these financial stress companions, it's a brilliant idea. It's beautiful. The dogs are adorable. How do you connect that advertising idea to behavior in the branch? Because I think for a lot of people, they still experience the hard sell of credit cards and lines of credit and different accounts and insurance and all that stuff from all the major players. All of them have a similar metric orientation because you're for profit. And if I ran a bank, I'd do the same.
Yeah, I think it comes down to advice, and it comes down to what's important to Canadians right now is really understanding goals. So we focus on goals. We focus on having that conversation, and that's really the difference. So for example, a client may have a goal to travel, pay off debt, or build an emergency fund. We want to have a conversation that will reflect on what's changed in the past year, past couple of years. And then from there, we want to know and we want to understand, are the client's goals still relevant? And so we'll use, not only will we have a good conversation, but we'll use some digital goal planning tools like our digital goal planner, and we'll be able to map out clients' goals and you know, talk to them about what's important. If it's retirement, for example, what does retirement look like? What is the income you think you need today in retirement? And we'll map that out. And we'll track their success along the way. So it really is about the relationship. It's about the advice. It's about getting to know our clients.
Are you a dog person?
Yeah, of course. I don't have one, but actually I am a dog person. I am a dog
You like
person,
them? Yes. Yeah, but they were yes, some I really do. Cute dogs. Carissa, they thank were. You for sharing the spot with us, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Carissa Lucraziano is CIBC's VP of Financial and Investment Advice.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
What is the best job in Canada right now? I mean, aside from ski instructor, poutine taster, and the host of Moolah Law. I mean, there are others. Turns out there's a list. Canadian hiring platform Indeed has released its report for the 20 best jobs. Michelle Slater, director at Indeed, joins us now. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
How do you define best?
Well, I often think that my job is kind of the best job in Canada.
Me too. Me too.
But all jokes aside, we look at three different criteria to figure out what are the best jobs in Canada. And the first one starts with the opportunity. So are there a lot of jobs out there? And what has actually been the growth in the share of job postings between 2019 and 2022? The next criteria is of no surprise to any of us. It's how much money are you actually going to make? So we are looking at the salary minimum being above the Canadian median salary, which is about $65,000. And that's based on census data from 2020. And then the third criteria is flexibility. For those of us who have the opportunity to work remotely or even have an opportunity for hybrid work, we looked at jobs that had at least 10% of postings that did include that opportunity to work, not necessarily in an office or a frontline worker or in a store, but that opportunity to work remotely or in hybrid locations.
Would flexibility have been on your radar pre-pandemic? Because now it's table stakes. Like I am not going anywhere 5 days a week, but I would not have said that in 2019.
You know, I have been working for over 20 years, and up until the pandemic happened, I maybe worked from home one day a month. And typically it was because I had an appointment, maybe I was having some work done in my home or a delivery. And now for me, I spend the vast majority of time working from my home office. And frankly, I love it. But I think that for many Canadians and many employers, flexibility was a nice to have, but not something that was being demanded or not being looked at clearly as it has been as a direct result of what we've gone through in the last couple of years.
The top three jobs are data engineer, data analyst, and business systems analyst. And even outside of the top three, there are a lot of tech jobs on this list. How would you characterize that as a theme?
We're seeing the top six out of the top 10 jobs be in the tech industry. And yes, we've all read the headlines recently of some of the big tech companies going through pretty significant layoffs and hiring freezes. But if you pause for a second and think about all of the industries in Canada, whether that's industries that are in forestry or mining, all the way to retail, financial services, and even healthcare services, every single industry has a need for people who have technical skills. And so whether you're looking for a job as a data engineer, which frankly I had to look up, and it's basically someone who looks at a whole bunch of data, interprets it, and then it is actually used to be able to make better business decisions. Those types of roles are needed regardless of the industry. And so individuals who are thinking like, should I go back to school and maybe increase my education around technical skills? Have a look at this list because it could give you some ideas of what might be out there for you.
Well, I do want to follow up on that one. So for job seekers who are qualified data engineers, it's great. Like, okay, cool. I'll apply for those jobs. But for those who may not hold the qualifications or have those skills, what do you want them to take away from the list?
There's lots of things on the list that are surprising to us this year that weren't there in previous years. So if you don't have technical skills and maybe it's not an area of interest for you, there's a couple of other jobs that popped out to me, and they're more focused on workplace well-being, specifically around HR positions and even positions around environmental health and safety specialists. We're seeing this pop off the list, these workplace trends around workplace well-being, because frankly, more and more people are demanding that. In fact, we did a recent study that said 77% of people report that it's important to see information around employee well-being when considering working at a company. So jobs like that are really coming to life, not just now, but in the last couple of years.
The one that surprised me the most, dietitian. Why do you think the dietitian role was so high on your list?
It goes back to the fact that Canadians are having a much greater focus on their health. And health means a lot to different people. For some of us, it's, I better watch what I'm putting in my body. What type of food do I eat and how does it make me feel? And dietitian coming up on this list for the first time again shows this change in mindset that Canadians are having. And whether it's a direct result from the pandemic or just the change in how our society is thinking and acting, more and more workplace well-being and healthy lifestyles and thinking of that nice balance of workplace happiness is becoming much more important to Canadians.
One of the real actionable insights that I think people can take away from your list is on the median annual salary, because there is such low transparency in our culture around salary. You really don't know, you know, what people are earning who sit in the cubicle next to you. So what do you think people can glean from the salary information and use it to advocate for themselves?
Well, if you are looking at a new job or looking to negotiate what you earn, start with a couple of things. Start by first figuring out what you're worth. We've got a calculator actually on our website on indeed.com where you can actually plug in what your education looks like, related experience, and use that to evaluate the salary that you should be earning. Do your research, talk to other people in the same type of profession that you're in, have a similar role, similar experience, and ask them quietly, can you tell me a range of what you earn? And then prepare an outline, make sure you've got those speaking points of why you want to make a certain salary and have certain expectations of what your income should be. And lastly, is stay flexible. So for some individuals, having a bit more vacation time is worth lots of money to them. And other individuals, they want to have a different benefits package. So being able to not only know what you're worth, do the research, be prepared, but also be flexible in that negotiation, it can make a big difference for individuals who are looking at either switching a job or having that annual review and having an opportunity to renegotiate what they're earning.
One of the huge benefits around sites like Indeed is there is much more efficiency for the labor market. Like you can find out what's available and how to apply and all that stuff. The downside is there is a ridiculous number of applicants. And as an employer, I see this, like you open the tap and you're flooded with people, many of whom are not even remotely qualified. For the clients, how do you ensure you cut through the noise with your application?
We've got a couple of tools available that enable matching services. So it's not like a dating service, but think of it in that similar type of environment where an employer is.
Are you swiping right at least or left or whichever direction it is?
Well, we hope they're swiping right on the right applicants for sure. But kind of thinking of that analogy as you're looking for certain attributes with an employee and you have the opportunity for this with our matching service is for those skills that people have on their resume to pop off. And it makes it a lot easier for an employer to find somebody who's got the qualifications they're looking for with the right experience and the right location as well.
One last question before we go. One of the areas from a diversity and inclusion perspective that technology has maybe helped and hindered is how employers think about diversity. Names, for example, for an immigrant who had a very common name in another country, that is a name that is not common here. And we know that there is bias afoot as we see names or universities even that we don't recognize. How does Indeed work to minimize the bias that is inherent in the human brain?
There's a couple of things that we recommend employers watch out for is, and when you have the chance to take bias out, whether that's having an open mind around maybe this individual doesn't have exactly the skill set that I'm looking for, but they're open to being trained on the job. That's one way to address maybe a different skill set. But then also, in Canada, we're made up of a wonderful nation of immigrants. In fact, about a quarter of the people in our workforce right now are actually relatively new to Canada, have moved here in the last 10 years. So in order to have the right type of employee, we strongly recommend that you do keep an open mindset, that you've got a diverse set of criteria to ensure that the people who work for your company look like the citizens that all live in this wonderful country that we're part of.
Michelle, thank you for your time today.
You're very welcome, Bruce. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Michelle Slater is director at Indeed, and she was here to talk about its recent report on the 20 best jobs in Canada. Stay with us. Coming up on Moolala, we're going to be talking about tax. I'll talk with Stan Simoli. He's president and CEO of Family Tax Recovery, and their tech-driven solution goes searching for credits and deductions that you may have missed when you filed your taxes in the past. Later, a Canadian-based consumer financing company that focuses on health and wellness. So basically, borrowing for braces is what I'd say. Taylor Inglis, the senior VP of EP Care. They'll be here to tell us how it works. And don't forget that we have a newsletter. You don't have to finance your way into that. You sign up. It's free. And once a month, you'll get a list of some of the things that we've done on this show, what I've done on CBC Radio, CityLine, BNN Bloomberg, blah, blah, blah. Head on over to moolala.ca. You can sign up for it there.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. Do you have this thought, this suspicion, this question that maybe, just maybe, you are missing out on some tax credits or deductions from your previous returns? One company looks to help you get those refunds for a fee. It is called Family Tax Recovery. And today we're going to talk to its president and CEO about how it all works. Stan Simoli joins us from Toronto. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay. This does have a bit of feels too good to be true about it, right? Like you sign on to your website and then you find magic money and drop it into one's bank account. I am oversimplifying here, but tell us, how does Family Tax Recovery work?
You're really not oversimplifying. You know, most people aren't aware. In fact, most accountants aren't aware that Canada's CRA allows taxpayers to go back and adjust their taxes for 10 years. It's the only country in the world that does that, as far as I know. So what we do is we go back 10 years and after doing some homework with our clients, we find out they forgot to take medical expenses 4 years ago, or they didn't know that you can charge tuition credits. They didn't know that if you're taking care of your parents, you can possibly get the caregiver credit, and so on and so on.
How do you do this sort of work at scale? Because I can imagine a super keen accountant who asks 14,000 questions and has done 14,000 returns in their career, they might get to it, but that can't be a profitable model. So how do you make it more efficient?
Very good. When we first started, I had a room full of accountants, and an accountant can do a personal tax review in about 2 or 3 hours. So they can get maybe 2 or 3 done a day. So we've replaced those accountants with automation. And with automation, you can do hundreds and hundreds of them.
What are the sort of questions that you would ask me as the client that would flag, you know, those medical expenses or the parent care or whatever?
Well, what we do is when people sign up, we have them fill out a rather lengthy questionnaire. And this questionnaire helps us identify whether or not there may be a refund or a credit available to them.
So they fill out this questionnaire and then tell me what happens next in the process.
Then the computers go to work and they know what to look for. Because really, you know, we've been doing this now since 2015. We've gotten around 25,000 refunds, so we know what to look for. And we know what the typical refund comes from.
Right. You ask, because I went to your website, you ask for a name and a phone number right away. The second question, though, on the second screen, you ask for the social insurance number. That felt a little forward. I kind of like drinks and dinner first. Why so fast?
It's funny you should say that, because people sign up online two ways. One is online through social media, and the other way is through our corporate partners. So when it comes to signing up online, what we find is people that are well off, they're not going to put that social insurance number in there. And not only that, they're scared of a tax review. Mm. I don't want to open a can of worms. I don't want to get audited. Everybody was born and raised to be afraid of the tax man. Mm. But the people that are lower income and are hurting for money and are desperate, they don't care if they give you your social insurance number. If there's a chance I'm going to get a refund, where do I sign? And so through social media, we find that we're helping a lot of lower income folks. It's more than 60% of our business.
And well, it is one of the things that lower income people don't realize is that even if you don't have a lot of income, you can qualify for a whole bunch of deductions and credits.
So absolutely true. And because we don't charge any upfront fees, everybody can afford to do it.
I want to talk about the fees. So the average refund you say your clients receive is $3,000. And what is your piece of that? How do you charge for that?
We charge 33% of whatever the refund is. And there's a sliding scale down to 10% for the larger, very large refunds.
And where does that scale kick in? What's the break point?
20,000, then 50,000, I think it is. We find that the typical refund is $200, $500, $600. But then several times a day, we'll get somebody who has a $15,000 refund that scales, that makes the average go way up.
Do you ring a bell when that happens?
No, we don't ring a bell, but now, we're very happy.
Once you're a client, it says your service will continue to search for new refund opportunities each new tax year. How does that work?
Automatically. Once you give us permission to represent, just like you give permission to your accountant, if you have one, to access your information at CRA, you give us that same kind of permission. And then every year we go in and see if there's anything else that's been missed.
How can I revoke that permission?
You click a box on a document and then it's automatically revoked at that juncture.
I understand the value to the client. I really do. The question that I have is the cost payoff, the 33%. How do you justify that?
Well, first of all, I would say about, as I mentioned before, 80 to 90% of the refunds come in at $200 or $300, $500. So we're losing money in every one of those. And I'll tell you this. Let me ask you this question. If I went on a treasure hunt for your family to find money, and I'm digging in the ground, would you let me keep a third of it if I found you money?
I don't know that I would, but that depends if you put the dirt back together and, you know, fix the sod over top of it, I think. It's a good question. And I would bet different humans have a different threshold, right? For what that percent, what feels fair about that perception, that percentage.
You have to have a comparable. There's nobody doing 10-year tax reviews. And This is money that belongs to the people, but it's gone forever if you don't go get it.
You have a number of affiliate offers, which in this day and age is how the world works. All of them link to Loans Canada. Do you own that site? How does that relationship work?
No, that's just actually one of our affiliate partners. We work with financial service companies. We work with lead generation companies, with employers. We're talking to unions now. We work with charitable organizations. Look, there's 30 million taxpayers in this country, and there's about $30 billion over at the CRA waiting for people to claim it.
I'm sure you're banking on a potential client who has a reasonable probability that there's a refund available to them. Some humans, though, may realize, oops, that's the wrong direction. What happens if after that work, you identify that actually the client owes CRA more?
We're very silent in a case like that. It's never happened.
Really, hey?
No, because we're going in to look at taxes that have already been filed. We're not refiling taxes. We're only changing one line on the taxes that have been already filed. And that line is changed if a refund is created. That's what we do.
Very interesting stuff. All right. So there's going to be a portion of people who are like, that sounds great. There are a portion of people who are like, I will do that myself. What is the single biggest tip you would have for people who don't have artificial intelligence at the ready for them to do this work themselves? And I take the asterisks. I know you're going to tell me they can't do this work for themselves, but if they could, what would you have them look at first?
If they could. The reason they can't is because the government makes, have you ever seen the tax code? It's a combination of Greek and math.
Yeah,
and
I read it every night before I go to bed. You kidding? Of course.
So it's very difficult for people, but you can buy tax software that can help. You can meet with an accountant to discuss it. An accountant would charge an arm and a leg to do a 10-year tax review, but you can meet with an accountant to get ideas. And there's tons of information online of the kind of things that are available to Canadian taxpayers. There are many, many credit programs federally and provincially. And that information is public.
One last question before we go. The thing that I see a lot is people who may well qualify for the disability tax credit based on their circumstances, but that's not easy to get. And there's a bunch of paperwork that you need to do. How do you handle that one in particular?
We don't really focus on disability tax credits. There are companies that do focus on that.
Yeah.
It's quite a process because you have to deal with doctors and you have to get all kinds of documents signed. But it's certainly worth going after. And again, for people with disabilities who want to do it themselves, there's tons of information available online on how to do it. And the CRA also tries to help, knowing that it's quite a difficult process.
Very interesting stuff. Stan, thank you for joining us today.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Bruce.
Stan Simoli is the president and CEO at Family Tax Recovery. And we were talking about its service to go back into the past and see if it can goose your refund.
Hi, it's me, your dad. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later, I'll speak to Taylor Inglis, Senior VP at EP Care, about their health and wellness financing options. You can, turns out you can borrow for braces. But first, do you have the itch to switch? I'll speak with NerdWallet's financial expert, Clay Jarvis, about what you need to know as you shop around for a new mortgage. If you have missed an episode of MooLala, you can go to moolala.ca to listen to past episodes. You can search by name, by topic. You can also go to the podcast platforms directly. We're on all of them, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Amazon, Prime, wherever else you listen to the podcast of your choice. Download the full show, write a review, subscribe. Hooray, hooray.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
I get asked a lot of questions, as you can imagine. And these days, I would say most of them are about mortgages. Last night, I'm walking down the street and someone in my neighborhood yells, "Should I go fixed or variable?" If your mortgage is set to renew, or if you're just kind of wondering like what you should be doing in this day and age, you might be considering shopping around for a different deal, a better deal. So what do you do if you've got the itch to switch? Clay Jarvis is NerdWallet Canada's personal finance expert. He's here to talk about some of the things one should consider. Hello there, Clay.
Hey, Bruce. How's it going?
Some mortgage insight is evergreen and it's relevant for years and years, and some is point in time. So I'm going to timestamp this conversation to say that we're taping it on January 31st, 2023, so people have that context if they're listening to that 10 years down the road. I want to start off with the questions one should ask if they have in their mind, like, geez, maybe I should switch. Maybe I should switch. What supplementary questions would you ask them to help guide their thinking?
I guess my first question I would ask them is, what do you stand to benefit from this? Mm-hmm. Switching lenders can always sound like a good idea, but until you actually look at your mortgage, look at what your current lender is offering in terms of a renewal, you really have to weigh the benefits. You know, is it going to be worth the hassle of finding a new lender? Is it going to be worth the fees that you might have to pay? It's not always just a cut and dried answer of, oh, a new mortgage is going to be better for me. You really have to dig into the details of the rate, of the details of the product, prepayment penalties, and find out what you're comfortable with for your next mortgage.
There is a difference. I wish there weren't, but there is a difference in terms of whether people renew at the lender that currently holds their mortgage or they choose to go somewhere else. What are some of the things that people should know about that if they decide to look outside of where their current relationship is?
Well, I think the main thing homeowners really have to understand is that if you decide to renew your mortgage at a new lender, you need to get requalified. And if you have to get requalified, that means passing a new mortgage stress test at today's mortgage rates. Mm. So if you have a mortgage that is 5 years old, chances are the interest rates attached to that are going to be different than what's on offer today. And if it turns out that maybe your financial situation is deteriorated, combining that with a higher stress test, it could make it very difficult to get into a more favorable mortgage.
There are many, many differences between fixed and variable, and then under variable, even adjustable. But one of them that's really relevant are the penalties associated with breaking the mortgage. Can you give us a sense of what that penalty could look like on variable versus what it could look like on fixed?
Well, with the variable penalty, it's usually a few months of interest. With a fixed mortgage, you could be paying tens of thousands of dollars because you're looking at trying to replace some of the interest that you are no longer going to be paying to your lender. So it's really important to try and time your switch to the end of your mortgage term. If you can do that, you should not have a problem. You should not be paying too many penalties. But if you try to break your mortgage in the middle of it, your lender is not going to like that. And chances are your bank account is not going to like it either.
Yeah. On fixed in particular.
Fixed is usually the bad one. I remember last year when the market was going crazy, people are trying to refinance And you would hear these horror stories of people getting hammered with $30,000, $40,000 penalties, and that can really wipe out the benefit of renewing somewhere else.
How much time should one allow? So, you know, your mortgage is coming due. It's, you know, I don't know, 6 months into the future. When do you start doing the work?
The general guiding principle is a few months. If you start too early, you'd say 6 months, chances are that rates might not be in the same spot once it's time to renew. But if you give yourself 3 months, that should give you time to compare lenders, compare what's on offer, and give yourself the confidence that when you finally get your renewal notice from your bank, which has to come at least 3 weeks before your renewal date, you'll be able to make a more confident decision.
There are many features and benefits out there depending on the product. There's payment vacations, there's lump sums, there's, you know, adding on a HELOC, all those sorts of things. Which of those features are the most compelling that you really should, you know, based on circumstance, you really should learn more about?
Well, I would say mortgages, with a lot of things involved with personal finance, there's no right answer for everybody. What you need to do is dig into the details, and I would be looking for flexibility in terms of changing your payments, in terms of arrangements that you might be able to make with your lender in case things do go south with your finances or your mortgage, because having that flexibility will allow you to, maybe you can change your payments, maybe you can change your payment frequency and give yourself some breathing room if you need it.
What's your view on adding in a home equity line of credit?
When variable rates are rising, HELOC debt can become a real anchor around a homeowner's neck. It's great to have when you have some sort of certainty that your interest rates are not going to spike and whatever you use your HELOC money for won't end up, you know, becoming way more expensive than you budgeted for. But it is a nice little lifeline. You know, if you need to update your property, if there is a financial emergency that you need to pay for, it's a reliable way of tapping into your home's equity and putting it towards something that you desperately need it for.
I want your perspective on the fixed versus variable question that I received yelled at me in the street. And I know that you and I would both preface any answer by, it depends. It depends on 14,000 things. But at the very highest level, how would you answer that question for someone?
Okay, well, I think historically, people have opted for variable rates because they tend to be cheaper. The rate tends to be a little lower than the fixed rate. And you can save some money that way. I know interviewing mortgage brokers for years, a lot of them opt for variables. Now, having said that, if you are in a rate scenario where those rates are rising, then you don't necessarily want to be in a variable. So in those moments, you can always opt for a short-term fixed rate loan. You know, Canadians love their five-year fixed rate loans, but that's not the only fixed rate out there. So you can always tap in, go for a two-year or a three-year fixed rate if you're unsure about variables. Then by the time your term winds up, you might have a few more options on the table.
The housing market in so many parts of this country, if it has pulled back a bit, oh well, it is overall significantly higher price-wise than it was a decade ago. And some people would like to withdraw some equity as a part of this mortgage process because they may have bought for $300 and now their place is worth $1 million or $700 or whatever the number is. What notes of caution would you have on that approach?
Again, I would think about your rate, what you're going to be paying now versus what you might be paying 6 months or a year from now, and work that into your budget. I would also make sure that what you're taking your home equity out for has value. I would be very suspicious if you're taking money out, you know, necessarily to spend on something discretionary, or something that's going to depreciate over time. If you have the ability to take out your equity and put it towards something that's going to increase in value, that's probably a stronger bet than putting it towards something else.
just before we go here, all Canadians who are looking at mortgages would know that the banks offer these products. They may be less aware about the alternative lenders who have a pretty significant market share in this country and that mortgage brokers do a lot of work with. But what about private lenders? What about the, you know, the access to mortgage financing that is less conventional?
Well, once you start getting away from the chartered banks and you go to your B lenders, and then you drop down into your private lenders, every time you go down a level, your interest rates and your fees and your penalties tend to increase quite significantly. So if you are going to reach out to a B lender or a private lender, you have to understand these are usually short-term loans. Your interest rate is going to be significantly higher than what you're probably going to pay at a big six bank. And if it comes time to renew, you could be faced with some pretty gnarly penalties that a lot of borrowers who deal with private lenders aren't necessarily ready about or ready for. And it's also safe to, or important to point out that B lenders and private lenders are not regulated at a federal level.
And I don't know who you'd put in the bucket of B lenders, but there are massive alternative lenders like First National or Street, or there's a whole list of them. They're actually more competitive than the banks on rates.
Precisely. Yeah, absolutely. And they make their business by helping people that the banks can't necessarily help. So it's certainly not a knock on the space. It's not a knock on those lenders. There is just a little bit less regulation. And it's also important to throw credit unions into this bucket because credit unions are provincially regulated. So they run with a few different standards, and they tend to give their members a little more wiggle room when it comes to getting their mortgages approved.
Really good point. Clay, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Clay Jarvis is NerdWallet Canada's personal finance expert. And we were talking mortgages in these crazy times. Stay with us. Coming up, you can get a loan on almost anything these days, not just your house, literally. We're going to look at a program called EP Care that's offering health and wellness financing solutions to Canadians. I'll speak to their senior EVP, Taylor Inglis, including things like borrowing for braces. Now, I am also the money columnist for CBC Radio. So every Wednesday afternoon, we dig into a topic relevant to you and to your financial life. So tune in there too.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Taking care of your health is important. Yes, it's important for quality of life, but it's also important financially, right? It's important to be healthy because you want to be able to work and live and all that. Taking care of your health, though, can also be very expensive if you don't have benefits coverage. And of course, not everybody does, or at least not across the spectrum of services they might need. Everyday People Financial Corp is a Canadian-based financial technology and consumer financing company, and they have expanded their EP Care program to more dental clinics across Canada. So we're going to talk about this. Like, what is healthcare? What is health and wellness financing? How does it work? Taylor Inglis is Senior Vice President at EP Care. He joins us today from Edmonton, Alberta. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce. How are you?
I have a 13-year-old. They have braces. I do not have benefits coverage, so we are paying for them over the course of the treatment period. Is that a simple example of what you're talking about when you talk about healthcare financing or health and wellness financing?
Yes, that would be a very simple example of it. But we offer more than just, you know, orthodontic coverage. We do general practitioners and specialists as well, you know, in full mouth implants or dentures, the orthodontic space. We have oral surgeon actually within the program as well. And we've even expanded out into the veterinarian space.
Really? And in the vet space, that would mean that if your pet needs a significant procedure that you can't just put on a credit card, you could get financing for that.
That's correct. Yeah.
How does this program work?
So, first, Bruce, my wife is a dentist, and she came home frustrated one day that she had to complete a procedure on an individual, which would actually end up with him receiving lower quality of oral health treatment because they couldn't afford what should have been the optimal treatment. So she came home frustrated and she said, you know, Taylor, you're in finance. What can we do here? So we built a platform that effectively allows clinics and doctors to offer their own in-house patient payment plans. So us being a financial technology company, we partner with these clinics, we create marketing collateral, we plug in on their website, we have QR codes and marketing collateral sitting in their operatories. And the individual, if they need anything from a $300 up to a $50,000 treatment, can scan the QR code in the clinic or apply online in advance of their appointment. And we go through an adjudication process. And by adjudication, what I mean is we look at certain approval criteria based off of the application. We are a little bit different than traditional financing companies. We base off our adjudication, our approvals off of cash flow and the patient's ability to pay. So what we do is we have the application come in, we send them a link to a third-party bank verification software, similar to what you would use if you logged into the government website, for example. Mm-hmm. And from that, we get transaction data so we can understand and qualify their income versus their expenses and understand what their free cash flow is on a monthly basis.
That is a rare approach compared to how most financing works, which is credit score oriented. Why a cash flow approach?
Well, we do look at credit scores. We do a soft pull on our applicants. But we also know from our experience that the credit score and the credit history isn't always a really good representation of somebody's financial capability, right? Individuals have had dings on their credit and their record may reflect that. And therefore, they may have a lower score and they may not qualify for some of the other third-party lenders that are out there. And so what we do, and just because, again, I built this for my wife's clinics and she's a partner in a multi-clinic practice here at Edmonton, we wanted this to be as consumer-friendly, as patient-friendly as possible. So, you know, we took a bit of a different approach based off of our, you know, track record and our history of adjudication and understanding, you know, individual credit and credit needs from patients.
Now, with a traditional loan, if a client does not pay, you can repo their car or you can, you know, sell off the debt to a collection agency. If someone in this context doesn't pay, do you come and like yank their braces out of their face?
No. Unfortunately, that's not an option for us. We don't securitize our loans or our payment plans with their infrastructure, so their braces. However, we do have a call center that operates, 6 days a week for 14 hours a day here in Edmonton. So for the first, say, 120 days of their delinquency, we work with them to try and get them caught up on their payments and make sure that they can make affordable payments and not suffer in their own, you know, personal lives financially. Now, if they go beyond 120 days, EP Financial actually owns collections agencies here in Canada. So we offer a full suite of in-house adjudication, management, remittance back to the clinics every month. And then if it does go into a situation where collections are required, that again is all an internal process for us here. Now, we don't repo cars. However, we do report to the bureaus. And so there is impact on their credit history.
Mm. What's the interest rate?
The effective interest rate or the APR is 6.6%. We marketed that as an 11.99% annual interest rate, but it's calculated as simple interest on a declining balance, and we calculate it daily. So over the course of a 12-month term, the effective interest rate is 6.6%. And there are no penalties, there are no changes to that. If there are missed payments or they are delinquent, we don't increase that rate, right? And we do that very intentionally to make it so that, again, this is a very consumer and patient-friendly financial product.
And certainly that is a big, big discount for someone who would otherwise be putting this on a credit card and having to pay that outstanding balance off over time. Maybe less competitive versus a line of credit, especially one that's secured. Where are you aiming for competitively?
Well, we want it to be the lowest cost provider for healthcare financing in the market. You are obviously familiar with the interest rate situation that's taking place currently in Canada. You know, we're hopeful that rates are going to steady and not continue to rise over the next, call it 6 to 12 months. But ultimately, where we position ourselves is the lowest cost healthcare provider in the country.
Where does financing not make sense? And maybe you have other examples here. I can see for someone who needs an emergency root canal, like, okay, you got to do this. But others who are looking for something that might be cosmetic, like, you know, whitening or braces for a cosmetic reason versus, you know, for something that you would do for a kid. How do you think that through?
Well, you know, honestly, it really depends on the individual person's financial situation and financial health. If they can afford to pay out of pocket, you know, a $6,500 invoice for Invisalign or for braces like you've referenced, then, you know, maybe that makes sense for them. You know, if they do have another demand for their capital and they have got a limited income, or like most Canadians are, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, about 53% of Canadians are currently living paycheck to paycheck. So there's not a lot of options for people out there, right?
Who provides the capital that you then lend?
So this is what makes our model unique, Bruce, is by allowing the clinics to offer their own in-house patient payment plans, we don't actually pay the clinics out upfront within the first 48 hours. And that also allows us to keep our interest rates as low as they are. What we do is we set the payment plan either, you know, monthly or bi-month or bi-weekly, and we collect and we just remit back to the clinic on a monthly basis.
Huh. So that's a very big difference versus financing of something that has a significant upfront cost. You need a fair amount of capital to underwrite that.
Correct.
How does your relationship with the dentists work in terms of the dollars? So are they paid a referral fee to send someone to you, or how does that work?
No. The doctors have a patient that has a need. So your example of an emergency root canal is a great example. And that's actually the case that drove this, is an individual came to my wife and needed an emergency root canal on one of their molars, so one of their big teeth in the back that you used to eat and chew with. Unfortunately, the $2,500 bill to get the root canal in the crown was out of reach for this person, so they had to end up pulling this tooth. Mm. What that means is that this individual is going to be chewing on their front teeth for the number of years, and over a period of time will unfortunately grind those teeth down and will need a full mouth implant case or dentures at some point in the next, call it 15 years. So for a preventative case like that, where we can put them on an affordable monthly payment plan over 12 months, the doctor then gets their annual billing. And so instead of charging the patient $350 to pull a tooth, they end up, you know, billing $2,000. And instead of giving suboptimal care to their patient, the patient ends up receiving the optimal care. And then sort of everybody wins in this scenario. And that's really what drove this platform, is we wanted to get creative and create a structure that allowed everybody to benefit.
We're seeing consumer financing in so many different areas, you know, like contractors can offer it through Finance It. There's a lot of models out there that there weren't 5 years ago. But with dental, when I went to the ortho for braces, they offered me a payment plan, but it was a payment plan. I wasn't borrowing. How is that structured differently?
Well, it would be very similar to what we're offering. Now, orthodontists, because their average treatment is quite high and braces are not cheap, typically they've been offering in-house financing for some time. This isn't a new thing for them. However, what they don't offer is proper adjudication or proper application criteria, right? They'll look to anybody to say, okay, you're a patient of ours and we can offer you this. But to your point earlier, if they do go delinquent or go, you know, beyond delinquent and into collections, there's not a lot of recourse there for these clinics because they don't have the ability to report into the credit bureaus, right? Yeah. This is an in-house financing tool, where ours is a sort of in-house but third party, and we do the proper adjudication, the proper management, the proper remittances every month. And then, you know, if they do unfortunately go delinquent, then we have the ability to engage with our collections division.
Right. Interesting. Taylor, thanks for your time today.
Absolutely, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Taylor Inglis, Senior EVP at EP Care. He was here to talk about health and wellness financing and how maybe you could borrow for braces. That is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our sponsors, Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country, for an easy way to contact us. Our email address, ask@moolala.ca. You can send us comments, questions, story ideas, feedback, I don't know, requests for dental care, something like that. On social media, I am Bruce Ellery on Twitter, Bruce Ellery Moolala on Facebook. Thank you for listening and have a great day.